Welcome, everyone. Thanks so much for joining us here. We're making history tonight by celebrating Southeast Asian New Year at the Commonwealth Club World Affairs of California. I think this is the very first time we've actually really done it. So all thanks to all those involved. You could tell there the entire community has come out. Kevin, what's going on? Kevin's on the main screen here. I know you can't see the audience, but it's a pretty full crowd and you're blown up. Thank you so much for joining us.
I know, no problem. Yeah, I'm very happy to be here. Unfortunately, I couldn't make it because I'm out here in Atlanta filming, but I'm glad we were able to make this work. I definitely feel a little awkward by how large I am in that theater. like Zordon or something, but I'm here.
You are here. You're here. And we can't wait to hear about this project that you got going on. And Sabaidi, IKP, we got some brother son folks up in here at the Commonwealth Club. This is really cool. Why don't we start with, you know, falling in love with what you do? I think this is really an important question for all of us. I'm so thrilled and honored to be on this stage with so much Southeast Asian talent. There's not a lot of talk about, you know, Asian talent in general right now, but this is very special that it's Southeast Asian talent. So, Kevin, you're our go-to guy because you're up on the screen. You can't see us, so you're always going to go first. Falling in love with filmmaking.
I started actually very young. I think I was a really impressionable kid. I have a hearing loss, so a lot of my input was just pure visuals. So, and I grew up in front of the television, and I was lucky enough to have two parents who love going to the movie theater. So I would just soak up as much as I can. And I went to a lot of movies that were rated R, PG-13, PG, even from a young age, because I think my parents thought that I would be mature enough to know that there was a difference. But the thing that I fell in love with the most, I believe it's when I saw a VHS making of for Ninja Turtles in the 1990, and then also in Terminator 2, they had a making of special VHS tape. And that's when I fell in love with the craftsmanship side of filmmaking, and that's where I felt drawn to. So I started really trying to learn as much as I can. I originally wanted to be a creature designer. I wanted to be Stan Winston or Rob Bottin or Rick Baker. Essentially, I wanted to create the Ninja Turtle costume because I was obsessed with Ninja Turtles back then. So that's the way I came in, and somehow I ended up in the choreography world. But as I got older, I realized just how much those two worlds actually really combine, especially for shows like Brother Son that have heavy action. It all is choreography and music. I'm just excited to be working on stuff that I can have fun making that feature a predominantly Asian cast and feature stories that I feel like I would have loved to see when I was younger, because I didn't really have many heroes that were up on the screen. But I do remember what an impact it was when I watched Dragon, the Bruce Lee story for the first time. I think my mind exploded, because up until then I was just watching, you know, all the white American heroes. And though I loved those films, I couldn't really relate to them. And there was a lot of stereotypical roles in my youth that I was able, you know, my mind couldn't process. So I remember just how much my brain exploded when I saw that particular movie, because he was the hero. He was cool. He overcame adversity. He got the girl. So that's how I fell in love with everything. And I'm still lucky enough to be here.
KP.
Well, I have to say, I love what I do is when I was a kid, Yu Meng Lao. I think all the festivals, the celebrations, we have Lakon, Shadow Puppetries, Mot Lam. So that's how I fell in love with performance and watching, you know, them perform. Not only that, but also my father is Kup Sam Nea. And so Mot Lam and all that traditional around my uncles and family really love me storytelling. I love storytelling. I love listening when the elder gets together at party, aunt and gossip, say all the stories of things or around the kitchens. And that's what made me fell in love with the arts and sharing our culture. And of course, the film war as well, too. One of the first film, I mean, I saw a lot of movies in Laos when I was a kid, sneaking in, didn't have money, snuck in, watching some of the Bollywoods or the Thai movies in the movie theater. And then in the refugee camp, my first American film I ever saw was Star Wars. And, you know, and I said, man, America's going to be like, I can't wait to get to America. It's going to be exactly like that. And so, but even though I didn't understood and I understand English, only knew was yes, no, and absent, you know, those were the three words I knew. But came watching the cinema. I just loved it. I just watched it. Of course, Bruce Lee was my one. The thing I was watching was growing up, all the martial art, the Saturday night martial art things, you know, the afternoon, Saturday afternoon martial art, the Black Belt Theater, watching these guys and the many great actors. I only not saw the things in the movie theaters. I also grew up in the watching theater. So I love Mako, the East-West Players, the Asian American theater here, which I came at a young age. Just, I was just inspired by some of these young, you know, these artists that were set to. I'm a little bit older. I'm a lot older than a lot of the young actors that started now. Like I started when we had cell phone, headshot was black and white, you know, we had to drive to the audition, things like that. So, but I love what I do because I get to share and tell stories. We go back to the base of why I love the performance art is to oral history that we did through the music. That's why tradition keeps going. And so I fell in love because it connects the soul. And as an artist, I'm always looking for challenges, not just to inspire my own stories, but I love telling other stories as well. And then working with other creative, collaborative things and working together to make this wonderful picture. And I'm a part of a piece of the puzzle, and I want to be part of a lot of the pieces of the puzzle as well. Yeah.
It's amazing. And Bojan, you're the, well, I don't, I'm sure Kevin and KP probably sing in the shower, but you're our pro singer here on the stage. Talk to us about falling in love with
actually
music.
My vocal lesson teacher used to say to me that everybody can sing. Mm. Now, how good you sound, that's a whole other thing. But so let's see. I think my earliest memory of really falling in love with music, I mean, I grew up in a musical family. So my father was a musician, not very typical. So in my home, music and was something that was very much fostered. And I grew up, my parents, when they resettled here in the United States post the genocide, post Khmer Rouge genocide, I was fairly young. I was about a year old when they came to the States. And so I grew up where I would watch my father perform. You know, it was in the basements of our homes, wherever it was, fellow refugees coming and gathering. And I think what I learned in witnessing that was sort of the power of music. You know, when they were there, everyone loves karaoke. And let's see, everyone's dancing and they're singing. And I think that it just allowed them to be happy and to forget kind of that the dark times that they had come from. But also when I was 6 years old, I remember my father had a musician friend, very talented guy, and he lived in Portland, Oregon, and he would come with his friend who was a truck driver. His friend gave me my very first cassette tape. That's how old I am. So I had my very first cassette tape, and it was the Chiffons. I don't know if anybody knows them, but I just remember singing the songs. It was like, my boyfriend's back and we're gonna be in trouble. Da 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 da. But I was like 6 years old, and I told my mom I was gonna warn her that I was gonna call her out on this on stage. She's like, you can't sing about boyfriends, you know, you're 6 years old. But for me, all I just remembered was it was the first actual like album that I fell in love with and discovered music. So
that's amazing. Well, thank you again so much, all of you, for being here with us tonight and sharing your talent. Now, it's incredible, right? We're all still doing what we love, but that's without saying that we probably did experience some challenges, especially as Southeast Asians. So let's chat a little bit about that. Kevin, want to go first?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, when I was younger, I did have a lot of identity issues, just simply because everywhere I turn, all the things that were being presented to me that were cool just didn't look like me. So when I found myself as a backup dancer, before I became a choreographer, I remember being pretty envious of everyone just kind of making the step ahead or progressing or getting on that tour. And even when I started choreographing, I was always kind of in the background. The attention was never paid on me, even though I was doing a lot of the work. Nobody really was able to see that. It maybe due to my age, my race, but it attributed to a lot of my insecurities just growing up in general. Cut to me being an adult, I will say that it was such an important thing for me to actually be an observer and a wallflower. It really, truly actually helped me stay sane, stay grounded, because the attention that I craved as a young adult or a teenager really became toxic for the people who were able to get that attention. So I was able to witness so many downfalls, and I am lucky that I didn't get to, I guess, in that moment shine, because I knew that eventually my time would come. But at that time, you just don't think it ever will come. So it did definitely knock me down all the time. It made me question whether or not I should even keep going if I wasn't getting any sort of validation or recognition. But I realized how immature kind of that was as I grew up, and how grateful I am for my very personal experience. But and it's great to be able to look at 2024 and see so many people who look like me on screen and making really cool moves, directing the biggest movies in Hollywood, winning the Oscars and getting recognition. I still think that we have a lot of work to do. But I will say the younger version of me, looking at the way the world is now, would be completely in love with what I watch. I mean, even BTS, like I would have never thought an all Asian male pop group would be that popular, because I didn't see it. And those types of stereotypes definitely worked against me as far as feeling cool. So I'm very grateful for that. A lot of younger kids now who are Asian American get to witness that you actually can be the star.
What about Thai Americans, though? And this might
be specific.
The what KP and Bo-chan end up talking about too, but seeing not just other Asians, but like other Thai American filmmakers and actors and actresses.
Yeah, I mean, it's when I was growing up, I wasn't able to meet a lot of Thai people specifically in my industry. It was very rare. And I remember as a young kid always wondering why that was, and I never really got that answer. But it was very rare for me to meet anybody Thai within my industry. And as I've been able to work more now, I am meeting more people behind the scenes, in front of the camera. And it's been one of those experiences that it's hard to verbalize or intellectualize. Like when I went to do Thai Cave Rescue, the feeling that I felt by just simply being there and being on that set and telling a Thai story with all Thai actors, it was nothing short of kind of a spiritual experience, because I did not even know how much I was craving that kind of comfort, but there was something just about existing in that place and looking around and seeing people that are like my family in many ways was incredibly comforting. And I remember there was like an aha moment where I was like, oh, wow, this is what it feels like. This is something that I've missed my whole life, because I did grow up in Los Angeles. So I never really got to have that really tight sense of community, especially a Thai community. It was challenging growing up to meet anybody else that I can reach out to and kind of commiserate with.
KP.
Well, I can say I started acting. I've been doing this for 30 plus years. I started in the 90s, early 90s. Being a first generation Lao refugee coming from and going into the industry and deciding to go into theater arts major, there wasn't a lot. There was a lot of challenges. They weren't like looked at upon. The play that I did in high school were not toward me. I was always the third tree or the ensemble. Never had opportunity. Even when I start going to LA and trying to act, you know, it's like finding Laotian actors was completely non-existent being a Lao actor. But I didn't, you know, the challenge I saw was like, you know, if someone wasn't out there, I wasn't going to wait for somebody. I start writing plays. I knew the other Asian actors, the Hmong actors were coming in to the department. Didn't going to have opportunity because I knew it. So I started creating. I've never written anything before. So I said, you know what? I'm going to do it. And no one's going to say no. So, but there are a lot of obstacles, of course, in the early 90s, you know, audition was very rare, especially being any Asian actor, just being alone. Going to auditions because you have, you know, there's one part for Asian, like every Asian actor you know that are currently now, we're always put in one room and you audition. We literally became family going to say, hey, you know, yeah, I'm going to I'll see you next. And we're driving across town just to try to get that opportunity. And so, you know, and that's why I really admire the Asian American Theater Company here with the East West Player. They will create something for us to be part of. You know, I was fortunate to be part of the East West Actors Network back then, but challenges were there. But I took it as a challenge, not an obstacle, but a challenge to a challenge. I'm a very stubborn person. I come from always like, no, you're not going to stop me from doing what I want doing, and persistent. I knew my value, and growing up, I didn't see a lot of like I said, loud actors, like 0.00%, you know, even the 2% of the Asian industry, but was an opportunity. So I was like, I'm going to keep sticking with it. And of course, you know, you have obstacles with the community. Like, why are you wasting your time? You know, you're not going to make it, things like that. But I always knew that I had a goal, and it was the only goal that I had. I wasn't going to stop. And so I keep persisting. And it's just timing. Everything's timing. I've spent so many years in and out, you know, but I never gave up the dream that I always had as a kid, going and watching movies, role-playing, being somebody, and having my long Laotian name across the screen, you know, as credit. I didn't change my name, but, you know, everyone in Hollywood said, change your name. You sound too Asian. I said, no, this is who I am. I'm going to represent who I am. And when they have a conversation, I can tell my story. And so that's the movie I did.
Challenges. Ooh, there were a lot. You know, I grew up singing with my father eventually, and was primarily singing in like the Cambodian American music circuit. And I think in a sense, my father was probably living vicariously through me. And so he had all these ideas of how I was going to cross over into the music scene. And I always joke around and say that my father is a combination of Selena's dad and Michael Jackson's dad, you know, in that sense. But as a young Cambodian American diaspora, you know, of 1.5 generation, I think it was a struggle for me because who I saw myself as an artist or what I wanted to do didn't always align with what he envisioned. And so finally, you know, when I went off on my own and decided to do my solo career in 2009, and that during that time, I was just reflecting on this actually like two nights ago with how rough it was. It really was. We didn't have social media, you know, and if you were an indie artist, you trying to budget your music video, Chnam On 16, the music video that I shot as an indie artist, and the reason why I was able to do it at the level that, you know, I did was because there were so many supporters and fellow artists that actually we collectively believed in something. And so I think that the challenge for me has always been to try to figure out, well, one, it's always how are you going to finance and what kind of music are you going to make, right? What kind of artist do you want to be? And secondly, for me as a Cambodian American artist, where it's so important to incorporate my culture and, you know, my country's history into it, is how do I create a sound that closes the cultural and generational gap while also is relatable to the masses? And so, and that was my attempt with Chnam On 16, you know, and I also wanted to, because post-genocide, statistically, I think it's like 80, somewhere between 80 to 90% of all the artists in the whole entire country were executed. And so to put that in perspective, if you can imagine, you know, 40 plus years of not really much art, music or anything coming from Cambodia, the motherland, and even here in, you know, the States. But so I think that was hard for me. It was like, I was either creating music that didn't resonate with folks from my mother's generation, or, you know, I didn't want to do that kind of music. It didn't feel like who I was, you know, and I, till this day, I refuse to. I'm just as stubborn as you. Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm going to take the challenge, the challenging part of the question and turn that into our superpowers. I will say, you know, growing up as a Lao American, it was really rough. I mean, it was like some of the silliest things, if I think about it, you know, was rough. Like kids making fun of you because you were a different kind of Asian, right? And even when you talk about the food that you ate, like fish sauce, they'd be like, oh gosh, it's so gross. And I used to feel so bad about that part. And so I wouldn't eat at school or invite people over because I was so ashamed of that. Now, you know, fast forward and I will spit that in your face. It's so good. You got to try it with me. I'm so proud to be, you know, Lao American. Yeah. Let's talk about all the things that, you know, that shaped us, you know, of who we are today, what we love about, right, our cultural backgrounds, about being Thai American, being Lao American, being Cambodian American, maybe even some of it that you were ashamed of before, but it's just really changed over time. Kevin.
Yeah, I mean, growing up, I like you, was very ashamed at a lot of those cultural landmarks, whether it be the food or just, and also just dealing with the microaggressions that I got from not only my school, but some of my best friends. And, you know, since then, because they're still my best friends to this day, have apologized for it. And it was kind of a nice experience because when I was younger, I wasn't really even aware that it was happening to me, but it was definitely taking a toll on my mental stability, you know, and it would be something like, oh yeah, you're like not Asian. You're like a cool Asian. And I'd be like, great. That's awesome, right? Or, yeah, I forget you're Asian sometime. You know, it was all these like little things, or girls even actually saying, hey, you know, you're kind of good looking for an Asian. And it just kind of never stopped. It always kept coming up, even in the music business that I found myself in. And I was always kind of the token and on behind the scenes. But those microaggressions and just kind of blatant aggressions definitely added up. And it's taken me years to kind of be able to deal with that because I found myself in my 20s not actually knowing who I was. And because I kept being a cultural chameleon, I kept attaching to different identities that I thought would elevate me to a level that would be acceptable. But cut to 2024, I think going through that definitely made me a stronger person today, even though there were some, you know, really lows and then slight and then back down. I'm learning to now navigate those waters and knowing that it's always going to be shifty. But yeah, it was difficult. It was very difficult. And I didn't really have a lot of people to talk to relate about it, just because there's kind of this unspoken sense of you push that down, you don't talk about it. And kind of, I remember even I had an older Asian relative of mine saying things like, we pride ourselves on dealing with it and not talking, like pushing it down was like a badge of honor. And I'm just so glad that in today's world, we kind of have a little bit more of a kind space to talk about those types of things, because it does make us all feel more connected and it helps us get over things together. But yeah, I mean, sometimes those things still happen, still microaggressions here and there, and sometimes in a very reverse way. I think there was a moment in time where, you know, we saw this big surge of Asian content in Hollywood, but then it got to a point where the only content that I was being spoken about was only Asian. It was all of a sudden, oh, you can only do that now, and we'll give you that opportunity. But trying every day to shift that away just to just showcase that we are all capable of multiple things across different cultures, and we have just the same amount of versatility as anybody else.
Hear, hear. KP.
I think what I love about our community as a Southeast Asian as in general is I love our community get together when we get together through food, the music, you know, the things that connect us, even though we're not in our homeland, we're connected to those little things. I love about seeing events where the younger generations are doing the dances. What I saw last night, it was just amazing. It makes me emotional to watch that they continue on carrying those things. So even, you know, for me, when I was growing up doing the industry, I was fighting a lot against our community because I'm a Lao actor. I'm doing all this production. How come you're not coming in to see the plays and support me? You know, it's like you never get those, but I always in the back of my mind said, you know what, just keep doing it. Keep doing it because you're putting yourself out there for the other community to see that that we exist. And so some of the things that I saw and now, and like I said, nowadays, I see a lot of the young generations are putting themselves out there. I said, encourage them because I knew I didn't have that early encouragement when I started my career from even the community, because even going to see an aunt, uncle stuff, they're like, your son is crazy. He's doing an industry that nobody wants. How come he's not being an engineer, a doctor, a lawyer? Now I tease him. I play those things on television, aunt, uncle. So it's okay. But now I get to do that with the young generation. I say, look, you should do it. Inspire them to get them moving forward. So that's what I love about our community. It's like, you know, when we come together, we come together. But all at the same time, when we go against each other, it's ugly. And that's some things that, you know, it's a cross, doesn't matter. But I encourage, you know, that like us, we have a voice. And that's why in the industry, like I said, you know, I'm not just paying an Asian guy. I'm an actor to give me an opportunity. Actor, we love challenges. As an artist, we love challenges. If you're going to give me something, I will spend and focus on it and be the best at. That's part of the thing about us being our community. When we put our mind into something, we don't give up. We put 110%+ to school, to things we do, because that is ingrained from our families and our community. And that is one of the strongest things that I love about our resilience that we have. And I look at my father and my mother, they are my heroes. I saw the resilience and going through the wars. And when I look at that, I said, that's what I want to pass on, etc. And so as an artist, like I said, I'm stubborn. Don't ever say no to me because I will always find way.
Are you ready for that moment when I said, I'm going to put you on the spot? You ready?
I love challenges.
Okay.
It might not work, but I like challenges. I'll go with the flow.
Okay. Tell us like your favorite like line or scene from like a movie or your favorite actor.
You know, I love, you know, it's I like when I was watching Bruce Lee, you know, when he Enter the Dragon, when he was to fight, don't pull like the finger, you know. That's one of my, but it's really very simple. I said, you know, beyond the star, because you look beyond. And I like that one of scenes simple. And I said, that was one of my, I love the way he said it. He not no action, just very philosophy, you know.
Here comes the challenge.
Yeah.
KP.
Yes.
Do that scene for us.
Don't look at the finger. No, it's. I know. You're going to put me on the spot. Always, everybody put actors on the spot. But I gave you a visual, and that's what I painted you. A visual.
Thanks for playing on the Michelle Meow Show. Bojan, what do you love about being, you know, Cambodian?
Oh, our superpower? I mean, I think he touched on a lot of it. But I think, I mean, our resiliency. We're survivors, you know. And specifically for Cambodian Americans who are refugees and, you know, culturally we come here. We are survivors. And I think a lot of the music and the art and kind of what I have embraced as an artist or has inspired me is to do that paradigm shift of changing the narrative from being victims to survivors. And now what we are witnessing, you know, when I released the music in 2009, and like I said, it was hard then because we were still so much of a voiceless generation where our parents and that generation, they were apprehensive and couldn't really verbalize or share what they had gone through, the atrocities. So 1.5 generation, like myself, we're struggling, trying to grasp and gravitate and figure out who we are. And I said, you know what? I want it to be that it is darkest before the dawn. It's the dawn now, you know? And that's exactly what I think I've focused on as an artist, and that's our superpower. And we see that now in the community. 2009, when I first released it, to what I see is happening now in the Cambodian American diaspora, art and music, film industry is that rebirth that we have waited for so long, where people now are more fearless and more willing to explore, experiment, and move out of the confines of the box that they've been in for so long. And so there's the ingenuity, the resiliency, and the innovation. That's our superpower.
Absolutely. Absolutely. By the way, I mean, KP brought it up, but yes, Southeast Asian community, we love to come together. We love food. Mm-hmm. I hear your stomachs grumbling. There's going to be a lot of food. Don't worry. Okay. We're almost there. But also, we'll have performances. And actually, we are going to play a music video by Bochan. So, you know, hang tight. We got a few more questions to go. I want to hang out with my new friends, my people that, you know, I look up to. I have to be honest with you. When I was putting this program together, I was trying to Google us. That's a short list. You know, Wikipedia doesn't have a lot of, and I'm like, well, I'll just look for all the people with all the long names. That's how you can tell, like, yeah, you know, who should be on this panel. With that being said, though, like, you all have inspired me. There's been people that inspire you. I mean, gosh, you know, Kevin, and you did Britney Spears' music video, and Mortal Kombat would go down in history as you know, something that has shaped even my generation. KP, Michelle Yeoh. I mean, both of you working with her, Bochan putting your music out there as a Cambodian American, which is, you know, making history. It's not a lot of people are doing that dual, right? Both in Khmer and English, and making that digestible for a general audience. So that was just a really long way of asking you, you know, just to share with us people who inspire you, and it will continue to shape you and your talent and what you do, your innovation going forward. Kevin.
Well, my answer is going to sound a little cheesy, but it's just simply true. My sister really does inspire me quite a bit. Just to see what she's been able to accomplish as a Thai American and as a woman who, you know, suffers with lupus, and all of the things that she's had to overcome in order to achieve her dream. So I'm definitely my sister's younger brother. And the only reason I feel like I am in this position now is because I mimicked her growing up. So, like, even when I was dancing, it was because I was watching her dance rehearsal. Like, she's 9 years older than me, so I just wanted to copy my cool older sister. And kind of through her lens, I've been able to witness Hollywood. And my family has also just been so resilient in the way that they've been able to overcome all of the challenges and made a life for themselves. And, you know, my dad came to this country with nothing and somehow ended up becoming a transportation coordinator in the business, which allowed me to go to sets and watch some cool stuff and see how movies are made and the craftsmanship and the difficulty and the art form. So they really do inspire me still to this day. And I'm so lucky to have that. On a Hollywood level, I gotta give so many props to John Chu. Like, I've known him for a while, and to see what he's been able to do and make so many milestones and such an impact has been nothing short of just massively impressive. And to see that he still pays respect and has kindness is kind of amazing. He definitely is always pointing back to his roots and is always giving that the honor that it's due. And I just love that he's been able to maintain the same spirit, the same, an immense amount of talent, but also still remembering where he came from.
KP?
Well, Kevin, it might sound cheesy, but my parents And my family and my aunt and uncles are my inspiration to what I'm doing. And not just blood uncles and aunties, you know, in our culture, everybody's auntie and uncles because of what they have sacrificed, the resiliency to give us an opportunity, a life to create something from scratch. And having that opportunity, so they inspire me. Their story inspires me a lot. I get emotional just talking about it because I've always looked up and ever see sports heroes. Are you here? No, my parents, my aunts and uncles have been my inspiration. And the characters I play through all my stuff, is in little bits of stuff that layers of them because their life, they're real. Those are real stories. And it's almost like as an artist, it channels to you in that possession, in that moment, and you move forward. And so my families have always been inspired. My sister, my baby sister, first Lao person to get a PhD at Fresno State. And so that I encourage, we see that my sister education. So we have been inspired and have been absorbing by all these people that are in our lives. But again, I guess like Kevin's like in Hollywood and in industry, I've looked up so many people. Marco, amazing what he's done. Because he looked like my dad when he was playing Conan because that mustache. My dad just grew that full man. I said, that is it. I always looked at it. It was always inspiring me. It's like, oh, that's great. And of course, you know, James Hong, the guys who had started early stage. I look at old Hollywoods and with the Asian American actors that were there really inspire me to be what I achieve in terms of the South Asian. For me, I'm loving what I'm seeing. I'm loving a lot of young Hollywoods, a lot of directors. And I'm going, man, those guys, I'm learning even from the young folks. I'm learning a lot. And hopefully that for what I do, that I can inspire others as well. You know, that's my goal. It's we always a purpose. And there's a phrase I always tell people, like, I got to keep it very sexy and spicy. That's a phrase. And my family is definitely keep it very sexy and spicy.
I like that. It's a t-shirt somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. It is.
Bo-chan.
Honestly, I think it's going to be my parents and my family. We, growing up, So I had the opposite of you, which was I had no cousins, no aunties, no uncles. You know, I think the first time I ever experienced like intergenerational trauma, at least I think that's what they would call it, was I remember growing up in Colorado and it was Christmas and everybody, you know, after they go to Christmas break, they come back. I don't know if this is a thing in Colorado, but apparently everybody comes back with the sweater that their grandmother knitted for them. And I'm like, how come I don't have, you know, that was, I don't have a sweater, but it was actually the first time that I questioned, wait, I don't have grandparents. It never occurred to me before. And so for me, I think the inspiration comes from my mom and my dad and watching them. My late father, he passed away in 2006, but watching them build a life here, from the war to where, what they were able to achieve on their own and being the role models that they are and instilling in me that you really can do anything that you want to achieve. I've watched them better their lives, go to school for things, work double jobs, you know, whatever they had to do to bring to life whatever it was that they wanted to become. And it was empowering for me because I think something that's not very typical in the Southeast Asian community is that in my family, it was we spoke about the war. It was known that we were refugees but that was something that empowered me. So I remember, you know, going to school in Colorado, like I survived a war and I can do anything I want to because that's why I'm here. So it made me feel like a superhero. So I have to give that to my parents.
Wow. I guess I didn't really think about it in that way, you know, just mm-hmm. how much we are the survivors,
mm-hmm.
right? We keep going. So thank you so much for keeping our dreams alive and contributing. It is Songkran. It is BMAE. It's Southeast Asian New Year. So we all have some traditions. For me, yeah, growing up, it was... going to the temple, it was cleaning the house, cleaning or pouring water over my mom's, you know, feet and thanking, right, our parents for everything that they have done for us. Share with us your Southeast Asian New Year traditions if you have any. Kevin?
Yeah, mine, every year we would, it's not every year, but when we go to Wat Thai, actually, in which, because I lived in Van Nuys, so it was pretty close to us. And so we'd go there and watch some of the performances and pray with the monks, and then also eat some of the best food I've ever had. Like, I still go to Wat Thai if I can every Saturday, because it's simply the best. So yes, food really is a big motivator for me to go anywhere. But Wat Thai was definitely my tradition growing up.
Hippie.
Family gathering. You know, sister, you know, before my father passed, so he would invite all his relatives to come over. He'll get a pig, he'll get a cow, we'll get whatever it is, and we'll slaughter it. We'll get together, all the aunts, uncles, they gather, they cook, they barbecue. You know, that was some of the tradition. Now, since my dad passed away, you know, we still keep them. We don't slaughter anything. We just get together. And my sisters always say, she always cook, because when we grew up, cooking was very important, getting together in the kitchen. You know, I'm always the one that aunties, here, go wash this, go chop this all the time. So I'm always like, I can't say no, because, you know, else I won't eat. But traditionally we get together. Of course, we go to the temple of the New Year celebration, enjoy other people's food. You know, we also listen to the music, see the performances, but then we are just come to our home. And now, since we're all older, we have kids now, and with mom, we just get together and just have our traditional food, khao niao, you know, jiao. You know, I'm from the northern, you know, like an obon, all that stuff. So, and it's just, that's home and comfort, and that's our tradition. We get together and share. Just, we're happy to be together. That's my Lao tradition. Yeah.
I think my favorite part would be growing up. I really liked the social dance part. You know, I loved going to the temples, and the food, of course, is always great. And everyone's so nice, and it's like, eat, 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 you know. So I love that. But I think I would look forward to it, because it's not very often that we can go out to like a venue where you get to actually do the social dance, you know, the circle dance that happens a lot at the Ramvong, the Saravan, or the Lam Liu, and things like that. So I really enjoyed that part of it.
I just have one last question for y'all before we get to the next part of our evening here, the next part of our program. And that's really just going back to, you know, yeah, keeping the dream alive. And there are young people here today, right, that will be the next generation. And so what advice do you have for them as young Southeast Asian folks growing up in a very different time? Kevin?
This is something that I think I'm still trying to practice what I preach, but this world and this business specifically is just so competitive. And sometimes that is all you can see, and it really becomes blinding. It prohibits creative expression, because all you're focusing on is that competitive aspect. But I realized that the person that I was in most competition with every day has been myself. And it's just all things, situations I've created in my head, and I am constantly trying to get out of my own way. So I would just say to younger people, there's just such a desire for instant success, instant validation. If I don't get recognized within the first month, I will quit what I am doing. And a lot of that has to do with the competitive aspect, feeling like they just have no chance, so they just give up. So I would just really, really stress that crafts, like putting in the work, learning your craft, not expecting it to happen instantaneously. Focus on you and not all of the other people in the ring, and just naturally it'll happen, because you're actually focusing on the right things at that point.
I definitely agree with Kevin. I'm going to go on the same thing, especially in this industry. You know, a competitor is, don't worry, work on you. Always work on you. I always say, I tell my students, cultivate your craft. put in the work. There's no shortcut. There is no secret sauce. Everyone's asked, what is your secret sauce? I said, there's no secret sauce. It's always about putting the work in, be resilient in what you do, and never give up. Never, never give up. You know, I always, you know, I love, you know, in the midst of chaos, there's opportunity. You know, it's Sansu. You know, that's, I'm very big on you. There's always a way. Find a way. Be resilient. Don't give up. Work really hard. Don't try to compete. Like he says, don't worry about what everyone else says. Work on you. Work your craft. Because some people that are important in the industry will notice that. That's your next job, next year, next job. You know, and people always ask, what is your future? What is your role or things you want? I said, it's my next job. If I don't take care of what's now, how am I going to not next? So for the younger generation that are going this industry, like I said, there's no instant gratification. You got to work. I've been in this industry for 30 plus years and I'm still learning, guys. I'm still discovering new things, new technology. But one thing is you got to love what you do and do what you love and never, ever give up.
Yeah, I think I agree with, I mean, pretty much what they both said. And I think really knowing who you are as an artist, like who are you, and really stay true to it, because there's going to be an inevitable time where you will be tested. People will want you to look differently, sound differently, do things differently. And I think that's the time where you get tested and you have to decide who are you as an artist. And the ones that survive in the game long enough are the ones who are, I think, strong enough to be transparent and confident in who they are and what craft they're creating.
Can I add one more?
Yes, absolutely.
I'll say this to Youngford. Don't wait for someone to give you opportunity. You create that opportunity. You create those stories. Get your friends, get a camera, iPhone, create whatever you got to do. Don't wait, because that's whatever. I'm going to wait till I get to Hollywood. I'm going to wait to break. Don't, because you're going to be waiting for a long time. And there's a lot of people waiting. And either you know, like I said, there's only one that's going to survive or the one that's creating. We make noises. They call us crazy, but you know what? We're resilience.
So. Break out your iPhone. Get on TikTok right now. You are the next content creator, says KP. No, I'll end with my advice. Mm-hmm. It's okay to bring your jail everywhere you go.
Yep. Bupit bosap.
Everyone, let's give a round of applause for our speaker today, Kevin, KP, Bochan.
Thank you.
Thank you to the Bamboo for making tonight possible. Thank you to the Commonwealth Club World Affairs of California. I'm Michelle Miao. For future events or programs, you can head to commonwealthclub.org/MMS. Happy Songkran, Sabaiti Bimai, and Bochan, help me with the Khmer version.
Chnam on dapramoy.